Hello, and welcome to the Digital Sue podcast. I'm Samantha Davis, and it is important for me to let you, my fellow listeners, I don't listen to this shit.
Wow, and my positivity has left the building this year.
I have genuinely been attempting to be more positive this year, but just like my inability to accept a compliment, I can't take value in my own work still, I guess. It took a month, folks. Write it down.
This is editing, Sam, by the way. You'll be hearing from me throughout the podcast now. Back to your regularly scheduled program.
It's very important to me, for you, my listeners, to know what I just learned in my world history class about Renaissance era Japan. This is a direct quote from A History of World Societies that I had to buy for $40. Ugh. I'm recording this in the wintertime, so my throat's all like dry, but also scratchy and phlegmy. So excuse that cough. This line made every penny of that $40 worth it, because as soon as I read it, I could not stop laughing. Okay, my microphone was falling. Okay, on with the quote. Buddhist strictures against killing and Shinto ideas of pollution may account for the exclusion of butchers, leather workers, morticians, and lepers. But other groups, such as bamboo whisk makers, were also traditionally excluded for no obvious reason. Why is this so specific? What's wrong with bamboo whisks? Like, should I be researching this more instead of studying for my finals? Like, why is this intro taking so long to get to the podcast? It's probably because absolutely no one asked me for this episode content. On to the aprons. So the research for this episode was done on the wiki page for aprons, because I'm very lazy and I love Wikipedia, but don't tell my professors. I don't use it for papers. I don't know what you're talking about. And an article by fashion historian Dolores Monet on the history of the apron, which was really cool. And I really wanted to talk about aprons because as a woman in America, my body is barely my body. So I like to pick the most comfortable and fun clothes to put on it. And that includes my aprons because, as you guys know, I work in kitchens, so I have to wear aprons to work and I have to wear boring clothes that are comfy, but also, like, I look like everyone else, so it's nice to have something that shows how different I am and special, because I'm a special snowflake. But let's talk about the history first before we get into the anatomy of an apron. So Native Americans have the earliest evidence of using aprons, and it was possible ancestor to the loincloth, but I think it's the opposite way. I think I wrote that down backwards. So I think it goes like loincloth apron, but we'll see. And there's evidence that it was worn by Egyptians, Assyrians, and Grecians. And in Europe in the Middle Ages, an apron was used by the working class to signify a trade, like a cobbler, that's a guy who works on shoes, would have a very different apron to a butcher or a leather worker or a blacksmith. And it would signify trade, and you could, when you travel to other towns, you might be able to find tradespeople in your field by the look of their apron. However, in the Victorian era, which was fucking wild to me. Everything I hear about the Victorian era is crazy. But in the Victorian era, aprons were seen as a suggestive piece of clothing. It literally you're putting more clothes on, and somehow that's, like, suggestive. Like, it's ridiculous. But onto the anatomy, and then we'll talk styles of apron. And I'm thinking the style they were saying that was suggestive is the pinafore apron, and we'll get into what the hell that is. So while I'm talking about styles, I'm going to be referencing a bib or a skirt or ties, and I'm sure you guys know what I'm talking about, but just to cover all my bases, the bib is the top part of the apron. So if you're thinking about the thing that goes around your neck and attaches to the piece of clothing that attaches to the tie around your waist, and then there's the like front skirt, the bib is the top part that's attached, that basically, well, if you're a lady, covers your ladies, and if you're a guy, it just covers nipples that can be on Instagram.
All right, so this is Editing Sam back again. What's up? I'm really confused because I don't know why Past Me didn't just say it's called a bib because it's like a baby's bib. If you were slamming your head against your car wheel. My God, I forgot what a steering wheel was. If you're slamming your head against a car steering wheel on your commute because I didn't say bib, as in baby bib, I'm really sorry. I'm doing that, except I'm not driving, obviously. I'm hitting my head on a desk.
And then, like I said, the apron or skirt. So the skirt part of the apron is the one that covers your little legs. And that goes basically from the waist down to your knees, usually. That's called the skirt, but also it's just usually called the apron as well, because there are certain styles of apron that are just like basically half aprons where it just ties around your waist and nothing covers your chest. And then there's different sets of ties and closures that can be attached to these kinds of aprons. Okay, so like I was saying, a pinafore is a bib style of apron that covers the chest, but it doesn't have a loop that goes around your neck like modern aprons would. It's called a pinafore because it's pinned to your blouse or your dress, and that's how it got its name. If you are having trouble visualizing this, think Julie Andrews in the opening scene of Sound of Music. She's wearing a pinafore apron. So is Dorothy from The Wizard of Oz. She's also wearing a pinafore apron. Because there are certain versions of pinafores that have like little frilly straps on the arms, but they don't go, but it's not a loop around your neck. It's like goes over and behind your arm, and then it's like attaches to the front of the apron still, so it's still like an apron shape. There's no back to it. You've just got weird armholes or loops, I guess. Loops for your arms, not your neck. That was clear. Okay, so there's also a hostess apron, which is this kind of apron was popular in the 1950s, and it's a decorative half apron, and it was also called a party apron because you wore it to show off to people. And like I said, it is just basically the skirt of the apron with a tie around the waist. There's usually lots of lace and colors and other frills. I'm sure people like match their clothes to it. It's not necessarily to protect your clothing as much. Well, I mean, it is to protect your nice dress, but also it's supposed to look nice, you know? Which, I don't know, it defeats the point of an apron. I feel like if I was a 1950s housewife, I'd have to wear an apron over my apron. And that makes no sense. And then the popularity of frilly and over-the-top hostess aprons actually led to the modern mass-produced aprons with like kitschy sayings like, I don't know, dad griller. I'm completely blanking. I definitely should have written down an example like kitschy saying, but it was like kiss the cook. There's one. And that was, you know, for men and women. So it was a unisex kiss the cook apron. But like, you know what I mean? You probably got your dad that because you don't know what to buy him because he's distant or something. On to the next one, the smock. And so a smock apron is more of a dress than an apron. And some even have cute little cap sleeves, and they might have little lace on the ends to look kind of like a pinafore. And it can be used in a home kitchen like a pinafore, but it is predominantly used for painting and yard work. After like much deliberation, I really want one because they look really cute. And it's kind of similar to a cobbler apron that covers the front and the back, but with open sides. So it's almost like, I can't even think of like a shape that it would be in, but it's got like a little head hole and then there's like a flap in the back and the flap in the front, and you've got little closures down the sides. And the British sometimes call this cobbler's apron a tabard, and I've never heard of a tabard apron until I just saw Jenny Slate's stand-up special on Netflix. She has this great story about going on a date, and the guy shows up in a suit of mail and a tabard, apparently. But she called it a tunic, so they had a disagreement, and that's why she didn't call him, definitely. Not because he showed up in fucking chainmail. But honestly, like, she really spoke to me when with her thoughts on modern dating, like, right now. It's just, there's so many... Ugh, I also sometimes have the, like, is this really it? Well, let's move on to probably the most familiar shape of cut of apron, and it's called a chef's apron or a butcher's apron. It's got the bib, and it's got a skirt, but it's got the loop around your neck that attaches to the bib, and two ties in the back to tie around your waist. So, as nice as they are and as cute as they can be, I find them kind of uncomfortable after a few hours of working in one. And especially if you have to put something in the pockets, which if you're working in an apron, you've got to put something in the pockets. Like, something's going to be in there. So I don't like it because once you put something in the pocket, it like pulls at the neck loop too much, and it actually makes you sort of hunch. And my posture is bad enough, and so my back ends up hurting really bad after a shift wearing that. So I prefer this style, but the ties are in a crossback situation. So instead of a loop and ties in the end, there's really, really long ties that attach to the sides of the bib. And then you can cross them around your back and loop them through some loops where the waist should be, and then tie them behind your back. And they're so comfortable. And everyone I know in the industry actually really prefers this style. So it's not just me with back problems over here. Like, it's actually very comfortable. And this style with the crossback, I don't know why, but I've noticed it's got much bigger pockets and more pockets. So pretty good. And lastly, the style I do know of, well, there's another like one, but it's kind of a throwaway one that I found on Pinterest. But lastly, the style of apron that is actually gaining popularity really recently, and I've only seen in the past like 3 or 4 years popularly, is a Japanese style apron. And it looks really comfortable. Like, I would wear this to work. And it's really similar to the crossback chef's apron I was just telling you about, but there's no ties to loop around, some like hooks in the sides. It's all one piece, and it just crosses back after you put your arms in the armholes. And it looks really comfortable, so there's nothing tied to you. And since there's no ties, well, also, if there's ties, literally anyone can wear that apron. It's, you know, you can tie it behind your back, you can wear it. And this one also, you just don't have to worry about ties. So if, like, you have a child apron, no, you shouldn't wear a child's apron. Forget that. I really recommend trying out a couple different styles. So you could go to the thrift store, see if they have those, but really... something that I've been doing lately, because the family sewing machine has been broken and we keep forgetting to get it fixed. If you cut the pieces and bring them to a seamstress or something, they'll usually sew them together for you. And like if you pay like a seamstress or a tailor, they'll sew them together for you. There's also a no sew option that I found on Pinterest while I was looking through pictures of aprons. And it's called a square apron. So you cut like a really large square of fabric. So one corner is like, so you want to cut it so that one corner is about like mid-calf, and then the other corner is like right under your chin. And that's like the corner that's right under your chin is directly diagonal to the corner that's mid calf, and then you cut the so you like fold over the corner that's under your chin so that it fits like an apron would on the bib side, and then you cut that, and then you attach, and then you like attach ties on the bib, and you attach ties on the sides, and you can just glue them on apparently to this mommy blogger, but she says she really liked the style and it looked pretty cute. So if you're looking for like an Instagrammable apron, check that out. I'm sure if you type into Pinterest or like Instagram, like square apron tutorial, it'll find it for you. But while we're talking about kind of money saving measures, I have a couple thoughts on how to build a kitchen on a budget. Like maybe you're just out of college or you're just getting into college and you just gotta, basically you're in your first apartment or your first kitchen where your parents aren't with you and you're doing this thing and you want to like build your kitchen, but you have a college student or a post-grad income, which is not great. I highly suggest researching to find flea markets and estate sales, and you got to make friends with the people at flea markets because they'll hide shit for you if they like you. And like closeout kitchen sales are also really good for larger equipment. Like you can get a mixer for very cheap or a food processor. And kitchen closeout sales are kind of sad, but the restaurant business does have a very high turnover rate, which means not just that they go through cooks very fast, it means like businesses fail all the time, like sadly. And people buy a lot of kitchen equipment to start a kitchen, and they need to get this out of here fast because they need to get out of this property fast. So they're having a closeout kitchen sale. And it's like my last boss, he found like 40 spatulas and like he found like great deals on hand tools and he found great deals on ovens. And honestly, it's a pretty great racket if you ask me. Racket, what is that? If you ask me, it's like a pretty good avenue to pursue if you're building a kitchen at home. And also, if you just can't seem to find that many flea markets or estate sales or closeout kitchen sales, restaurant supply stores in your area are also a good place to look for. Restaurant supply stores, they have a good selection of all sorts of tools on the cheap. And since they do bulk orders, if you like break a lot of a certain type of tool, you can buy six and it's not going to break the bank. I also, as a former Bed Bath & Beyond employee, you got to save those coupons. They're always honored. I don't think they're going to change that anytime soon because that's kind of their gimmick and I feel like people would riot. So something that happens when Bed Bath & Beyond takes your coupons is they have to rip the coupon down the scanner thingy, so it can't be used again. And because sometimes people will use them, throw them, and the cashier will take it and throw it away. And then people like circle back and pull it out of the trash can and try to use it again because they know if they make enough of a stink about it at the line that like maybe a manager might just have one on them or like just manually put it in, even though I don't think managers can just manually put in a coupon. But like they'll find one for you. I'm not saying you should do that because it's actually like really stressful and you could get someone like really in a lot of trouble for forcing them to do something like that. But if you don't have a lot of Bath & Beyond coupons or like your roommate threw them out because they thought they expired, you can also get the app Retail Me Not. It actually has sales pricing for all sorts of stores and it's basically like, you know how the Honey app that you download on your computer searches the web for all sorts of coupons and applies them at checkout in your online shopping purchases? This is basically Honey for in-person stuff, and it provides a barcode for people to scan. And everyone who uses it that I know of says they like it. So one more thing I think is good to know is talk to a knife or a kitchen supply store. In kitchen supply stores, they have like a good selection of knives usually. I would just like to say you don't need expensive knives. You don't need a $500 knife, really. Unless, like, you've been saving up and that's, like, I have a collection of kind of expensive knives because that was really important to me and I really like them and, like, they all represent very momentous points in my life. Like, I graduated from culinary school or I got my first job that wasn't paying me minimum wage. Not gonna lie, it took me, like, 4 years to get to that. It was, yeah, ridiculous. I have worked with plenty of cheap knives. As long as you treat them really nice and you keep them sharp and basically treat them like you spent $500 on them, they'll last you for a really long time if you get a dependable brand. I will say, if you're going to get something with a plastic handle, make sure it's from a kitchen supply store and not the grocery store, because those are a lot cheap, pretty cheaply made, and then the ones at a kitchen supply store are a little more reliable if they have the plastic handle.
Yeah, so if you're wondering what that noise just was, that was my microphone stand slowly trying to fall off my table and bring my pop guard with it. This is editing me, by the way. I just got a new microphone at this time, though, so it'll be fine now. You probably won't hear any more of that.
All right, on to the book and the tool of the month. So, the book of the week is going to be Fearless Baker by Erin Jean McDowell. So, this is one of two books that she has written. The other one, The Book on Pie, is going to come out fall of this coming year, fall 2020, which is exciting. I really love the way she writes a cookbook. And I got this book as a part of Prime Reading because I have like a really extensive list of cookbooks that I want to get, and I just keep like this like hoard of them because I have a problem. And I added it, and for some reason this pop-up said, oh, do you want to get this as a part of Prime Reading? I was like, oh, okay. And I got it as like a Kindle, basically. And I've been reading this on my phone between classes, and it is so amazing. I really love the way she writes recipes. She has great ideas, and honestly, it's like anyone could cook from this and have perfect results every time. If you want to know more about her and her writing style, she has been working as a food writer for a really long time for a bunch of different companies. And she's done videos for New York Times Cooking, which I just figured out exists, and it's a great YouTube channel. The videos through that YouTube channel that she's done, which are like her kitchen tour and Harry Potter Krunkenbusch, are like some of my favorite videos they've done. She's got like a great personality and a cute dog, so always fun. And, you know, she's coming out with a new cookbook next year, so her Instagram is actually full of the process of those pictures. At this point when the podcast is going to come out, this episode is coming out, like her videos that she does every day of her baking all the pies off for pictures is done, but she has like great photos of it on her regular Instagram feed, as well as like a ton of her dog, who's adorable. His name's Brimley and I love him. He's really cute. So my tool of the week is a glass pie pan. So real talk, for the longest time, I used those disposable aluminum pie pans from the grocery store because I didn't really make pies that much. Like I liked eating pie and I liked making it, but until I got out of school for a few years, I realized like that's kind of my favorite dessert to make right now is pie. I just think that it's so versatile and you can use all sorts of different textures. It's genuinely really fun, and it's like kind of my happy place to make a pie. And the advantage of a glass pie pan versus any other material pie pan is because glass is one of the best conductors of heat. So it provides a nice crisp crust, and you can see that happening through the glass. So I also like the fact that I can see the color of my crust changing, and I can see it browning on the bottom, so I know it's not soggy. And I think that's just really good for any new baker who's nervous about doing an underdone crust. So this is kind of a weird episode this week, but I thought it would be fun. I'll have a lot of, I'm going to compile some cool pictures of all the aprons I talked about and have them on the Instagram. And you can send in your questions about food or any recommendations about new episodes or stuff to talk about to digitalsue@gmail.com. And the Instagram that I just talked about, it's @digitalsue. We'd love to have you guys. We just got a Facebook page as well. That's public, I believe. So search Digital Sue again and join the Facebook group. And have fun, and I hope you make an apron. Bye.